All right. I've got a series of questions I'm going to ask you, topics. Better if you do this without clothes on. So if you have clothes on, I'll give you a minute just to remove those.
Sure. I live my life naked, just inside of pants.
Okay, good. All right. I am joined by Tom Devenport, who is a very astute individual. Tom, won't you give literally a 30-second introduction of yourself, and then we'll get started on this topic of fatherhood.
Okay. Hi, I'm Tom Devenport. I currently live in northern Switzerland, but I have two little boys. Well, they're normal size. They're just young. 7 and 5. They're good guys. I try to be a good dad. I work as a stand-up comedian when there's stand-up comedy to be done and when there's not a virus keeping it from happening. A global pandemic, not a virus that I'm personally suffering from. So I guess there's a technical difference so one can... This has gotten too deep too fast. I apologize.
So you don't have any uncomfortable itching right now is what you're saying?
Not uncomfortable, no.
Okay, good. So
everything is itching just as it should be.
Oh, that's great. That's good to hear.
I've optimized my itching.
Oh, that's good. That's one of the greatest outcomes, I think, of the pandemic is that...
thread that needle, man. Thread that needle.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about fatherhood, and I'm glad that Tom's able to join me today. Normally, Tom and I would actually be in the same room during this interview because we both live in northern Switzerland. However, because of the pandemic, we are exercising social distancing. Talk to me about what your childhood was like with your father as it relates to him setting expectations and boundaries around I'm the father, you're the son.
It was a fairly simple process in which there was not room for a lot of doubt left in that. My dad was good at what he did, and he it's easy for me for this to sound like I'm casting it as he was some sort of monster about it. Not true. He was very old school, and he was raised, his father died when he was very, very young. And so he had a difficult upbringing, and so he had a sense of the world that was very 1950s is the way people might think of it today, where he had to look out for himself and step up from a very young age. And he loved me, and I knew it, and I loved him, and he knew it. However, it wasn't always, we weren't going to mistake ourselves for being buds when we became adults. That changed, but growing up, it was very clear that, look, this is the ground rules, and you're going to do this or there'll be problems.
Sure. No, it's interesting because I very much, know that, you know, in my experience growing up, you know, my dad was clearly the father. I was clearly the son. There was never any ambiguity. We were not buds. I think that's the right answer to a point because, you know, as a father now, I have the same viewpoint, although I'm somewhat softer in my approach. How are you approaching that dynamic and setting those boundaries between I'm the father, you're the son, now that you have two boys of your own?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. You have to... Finesse is not the word I would set out to choose, but it's the one that popped into my brain, so I'm going to go with it. There's figuring out a way to approach the thing where, because ultimately, I love them enough that there are difficult lessons that they must learn. They will learn them from me in the gentlest fashion possible because I love them, or they will learn those lessons later in life by someone who doesn't love them and doesn't and isn't as concerned about the consequences or outcomes on them. And so I push them to learn even distasteful lessons, like you got to listen or you got to do your part. I push them to learn that for me the easy way so that later they don't learn it the hard way, which yeah. I don't want for them. And so sure. That's kind of that's a discussion that we've had before of I know you don't like this. I get it. However, this is what we have to do because sometimes this is what we have to do. And if we don't learn this, then it puts us in a situation where later we're just going to get sucker punched by life.
Sure, sure. That's such a great point because, you know, we are, in a sense, preparing them for something that they can't even comprehend, you know? And I think that's part of the struggle of being a father is you have already been where they are going and you are currently in a position where you hope for them to be. You hope for them to grow up and start a family and be fathers themselves, but you can see something that they can't. And it's hard to communicate that, you know, and it's not about saying, hey, do this because I said so, but there's so much that's unsaid with that statement. It's not do this because I said so just because I want to be a pain in the butt, but it's
right.
Do this because I said so because I've got a view into the future and I've got an experience that you can't even understand yet. And that's why I'm saying it, you know, that's my motivation.
There's a verbal device that we use when sometimes we're somewhere and I have the ability to do something and they don't understand how that works. How did you do that? Special daddy skills.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to train them up with the special daddy skills so that they can build out a toolbox. And then when they get launched, because they're going to get launched into life because yeah. I won't be there to coach them their entire life. We came to this parenthood thing a little later in life and I'm not going to live forever. And so I've got to train them while I can train them and teach them to run or duck or fix or dance or smile or when's the time to sing? Well, get to singing. Whatever it is that it's time to do, watch for the moment, listen for your cues, go hard.
Yeah,
but if I don't teach them those things now, it's not like I can write it down and have them read. It would be unfortunate if all they had was notes that I'd left behind and they got to try and interpret all that and hope that I was clear and hope that they understand and hope that I was right. Things sure, like that. Sure.
No, so you're right on point with that.
Got to get it in them now because the goal is to launch because they're going to. There's going to come a time where they've got to go their path, and I want them to destroy their path, go take it, and do see your enemies driven before you and hear the lamentations of the women, whatever the Conan quote is on that.
Sure. No. Talk to me a little bit about keeping your cool. You know, there's something that I talked about when I did my, I would say, intro to fatherhood episode, and I talked a little bit about the difficulty in keeping your cool when you get frustrated with a situation going on during, you know, a parenting experience, and how you handle that. Talk a little bit about how difficult it is, or how you've managed to keep your cool during this fatherhood journey thus far.
Well, I'll confess it's been with mixed results. My goal is to instruct in a loving way. And sometimes when the seriousness of the moment achieves a certain level of criticality, a critical level, you got to go with the no, now, this, now. And it gets, I don't want them to see me blow up. They will see me sort through emotions. And I'm not afraid of letting them see the emotions. I don't want them to just see me as anger solving the problems or as upset solving the problems. And so we discuss them and we try if things go. If we have a hard time, we try to with them or with me. I try to do a postmortem on that experience. Hey, look, this is the sequence of events. This is something that can't be. I got more upset than I want to be. We got to focus on fixing this. I don't want our time together to be this. I want our time together to be awesome. because having the happy good time. And so there's a distinction between for them, when there's a, trying to formulate this effectively, there's a show child and a helper child idea. So if there was a show Dorian and a helper Dorian, sometimes show Dorian is fun and he's who's playing outside, and helper Dorian is, we got stuff that we got to do. We got to team up here. I need some helper Dorian. Show Dorian needs to park it. Helper Dorian needs to show up. And so we have that distinction where I want them to still have their fun and ridiculous side, because that's an important part of being a kid and developing their creativity and all kinds of stuff. However, sometimes this is what we got to do right now so that we can buy ourselves time to have more space, more slack, more latitude to be ridiculous.
Sure. No, that's great. That's a great point. There's something that is, that's been somewhat common in the U.S. I'm not sure, you know, how prevalent it is here in Europe, for kids at a school age, but in the U.S., you know, I lived there up until about 4 years ago, and, there were several team sports, especially at the younger level, where keeping score was discouraged, right? It's like, oh, we're just out here to have fun. And this is something I never got on that bandwagon. I completely disagree with it vehemently. And so I talk a little bit about that in another episode around, you know, my disdain for not keeping score. Talk a little bit about your opinion of why you think it's good or why you think it's bad to teach kids not to keep score or to keep score, and what that potentially means and how that translates into real life.
I think you'll notice, even in the games where the adults don't keep score, the kids do. So it's going to happen. And so you can lie about it to yourself, or you can acknowledge that this is what really goes on, because the kids know who won and who didn't, and they know who sucks and who doesn't, because that is, there's people that you don't want on your team. There's people that you're forced to accept onto your team, and you know how this is going. And, I think it's a bad idea to misrepresent that. It's possible to make it where it's only about winning, which is a horrible choice. Yeah. It's possible to make it where, because if it's about being better and learning, you play the cards that you're dealt in life, figure out which cards are your strong cards, play to your strengths.
Sure.
And when you're not having a sense of score, or you don't have to punish everyone else. Well, you're not as good at crocheting as I am. That's true. And when you can acknowledge your shortcomings, my crocheting skills are soft. But if you can accept that and not waste your energy on something that you're not good at, and I'm bad at basketball. I'm not good at it. I don't enjoy basketball, and I didn't put a lot of energy into getting a lot better at basketball, because even if I got good for me at basketball, it's never going to go anywhere for me. I'm not going to seek a bun. I'm not going to be sought out to play with other people, even in an amateur way. I'm not going to gain a bunch of enjoyment from it, probably, no matter how hard I work. I'm not going to enjoy the work to get to a place that I don't want to be.
Sure.
And so, not keeping score seems to be a great way to avoid hurting the feelings of people that are bad at something already.
Yeah.
And the underlying idea being that you embolden little tyrants, and that's, I don't think, true, because in life, if you don't understand your strengths and weaknesses, it's like never learning to lose. One of the most powerful things that you can learn in life is to lose, and do it with grace. Because it helps you, it motivates you to be better. It teaches you about your boundaries, because if you don't have boundaries, people won't have boundaries on your behalf. Mm-hmm. And you will violate other people's boundaries, and that it just creates this avalanche of problems that you can avoid.
Sure. Now, speaking about losing with grace, talk a little bit about how you have either experienced in your past with your own father, or how you talk about emotions with your boys and allowing them to see that emotional side. Something that I didn't really experience as much as a kid, you know, from my dad, was having like a deep emotional conversation and talking about emotions. Talk a little bit about how you discuss or don't discuss that with your boys.
Okay. Well, there's 7 and 5, so I have to calibrate everything to an appropriate level. But this is real life. This isn't a dress rehearsal. Last year, my father died after a not very long illness, but he'd been in generally poor health for a long time. And so they got to see me handle that. They got to experience it in their own way because we've lived far away for a long time. And so that would be an example of times when here's a full contact emotional event. And, you know, what I don't want to do is pack it up and never let them see how it's made. And so here's the end result of it, but you don't understand the stuff in there. And so I'll talk to them about, here's what I'm thinking about right now. Here's what I can do about it. Here's what I can write down and remember later about this. I've got to do what I've got to do right now to solve the problems of right now, but it's not that that's completely separated. So if, for example, with going and having a funeral and all that sort of stuff, and you go and you do the parts of that you just have to do to organize that funeral, but you also are mourning. And so you talk about your feelings and you acknowledge them, name them, and don't let them just be some nameless tyrant in the back of your head where the emotions drive you. And then try to encourage them to, when they have a similar phenomenon, an anger or a sadness or a whatever it is, or happiness, here, let's name this, let's sort this out. And so that we can not be held hostage by faceless, nameless emotions that are just driving us to do something wild.
No, that's well put. So that really kind of takes me to my next topic, which is somewhat of an emotional conversation that, you know, I've had with my son and with my daughter. And that's the whole idea of, you know, you want to leave a legacy, right? You're living a way in which you want to be remembered for your life and the things that you did and how you lived the life. How do you have that conversation? I know your kids are, you know, younger than mine. My daughter's 9. But, you know, it's one of those things where there are conversations you have at certain stages with your kids. But have you given them a sense already that, you know, life is not just about this finite time of your childhood? There's something that you're building upon. There's something greater out there than just right now. Do you talk about that with your boys?
In our own way, yes. There's a sense of there's big boy skills that they want to get to learn. They want to get to hike more, camp more, do more exciting stuff. They want to go on boats. And so we discuss a tool set, a toolkit of skills, and how that leads from where they are to a future place. And how someday maybe they'll have their own family and have their own kids, and then I'll be grandpa to those kids, that sort of thing. In terms of pinning it down to what they would understand as a legacy, we don't really do that yet because I think that would blow their minds. But the idea that we're not just camped out here in an eternal childhood, mm-hmm. that we're on a path, and their choices will help them get to their choices will get them to places, and that those choices can drive them to happier or unhappier places.
Yep.
And so we're producing an effect with our right now steers us to where we will be.
Sure. So the last question I have for you is really about when things go bad, right? Let's say one of your boys was working on a project and it turned out terrible, or they're playing a sport and they lost. How do you communicate the concept of keeping your head up? I mean, right now we're living in a pandemic, right? So all of our lives are changed. We're all basically supposed to be at home. We can't do what we normally would be doing. So we could say this is an adverse time, right? How do you talk to your boys or help them understand the concept of there's going to be adversity, but you have to manage how you respond? The cards you're
dealt is one that we talk about quite a bit. Because this is what we've got, this is where we are, because you can eternally imagine a world that would be better that's never going to happen for you. I wanted to ride my bicycle instead of walking. I wanted to ride my bicycle farther. I wanted to ride my bicycle farther on a different path. I wanted to get to do it for a longer amount of time. I wanted my friends to get to come. Well, what we had today is that we could walk and do this. And so we can do that and enjoy it, or we can imagine something that couldn't happen and be sad that an impossible thing couldn't happen. And finding a way to acknowledge what you've got and enjoy what you've got where you are, because we're going to look back on the time that we have in the middle of this time where everything's shut down because of the coronavirus. At some point in the future, we'll look back on it and it will be a time, and we will wonder what we did with the time, or we'll know exactly what we did with the time. It'll be a time where we sat and waited, or it'll be a time where we got stuff done. We got organized and we're like, oh, we're on break from a bunch of stuff. What do we do with it? And so with the boys, I try to, it depends on the nature of their defeat, in air quotes. Mm-hmm. If you lose a game, if you lose something, well, this isn't the last game. This isn't the only game. This is a game. And let's play the game. That's right. It is disappointing. What can we do to be better, to be better at this game, to have better skills? How do we improve ourselves, and how do we cast the moment in an appropriate context is ultimately what I'm going for. Because sometimes you lose, and sometimes you remember, oh, I lost a game. It was a game that we were playing for the purpose of having fun. And that game doesn't define you as a person. That game defines part of one afternoon, one day on a Tuesday when you were 7.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. You know, adversity is one of those things that, you know, we talk to our kids about, but I think allowing them to see how we handle it is really important as well. And, you know, like we talked about earlier, from an emotion standpoint, some examples are better than others, right? But I think even in that, there's a lesson. You know what? I didn't handle this as well last time, but next time there's better. And I think what's great about what's happening right now during this pandemic is that we have an opportunity to address a lot of unsaid things. We're able to address a lot of things on our list that we've said we don't have time for, that we've delayed or put off. But now, you know, there are no excuses at this point. And so I really appreciate you taking time to have this discussion. I think there are some great nuggets that you were able to convey, and I hope that, you know, someone that gets an opportunity to listen to this who may be struggling in the area of fatherhood, they may be at their wit's end, that they're able to glean some encouragement from what you said. So thank you for joining me. And I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, you as well.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.